For a moment she paused in her speech. She looked at me in a friendly way, as if she hoped for a prompted question from me. I remained silent. I didn't know anyway how one could ask an intelligent question is such a complicated theme. And if asked, would I be able to understand the following answer? So I preferred silence, and I gazed with rapt attention at the viewing screen, at scenes of war and devastation, and it went through my head, how and why were the Chechnyans capable and inspired to reproduce an event like this? Because between the first and the last warring demonstration lay thousands of years. 103 No sooner had the beautiful lady with the bud nose stopped her presentation with the computer, the view on the screen changed itself into two windows. One side showed a section on flight technology over the past centuries up until now. And the opposite side showed technologies, similar technologies, that had already been developed and applied hundreds of thousands of years ago on Earth. Indeed, both technologies were worth comparison. One thing the Chechnyans had not succeeded in doing was to destroy each other completely as we humans do, and that with high technology. When it comes to a weapon of attack, they had done it exclusively to gain higher technology over each other. When this activity was destroyed, it was unintended. Again the viewing screen changed and I viewed again a beautiful, wonderful Earth, and my instruction was ended. Dagilo took control of the machine into her hands. She manipulated the computer with a keyboard, and in a quick moment the big viewing screen locked itself up, so that the thin golden awning frame, or structural form, swallowed it up in a wonderfully glorious panel with engraved words. We were still in our places as Dagilo touched different keys on the computer. The hairy Paliano, Krotk, and the beautiful lady started conversing. They spoke very rapidly, so much that it was impossible for me to follow their conversation. Gently Dagilo interrupted the discussion. "Let's go into the next room," and she pointed with her hand in the opposite direction. I hadn't even noticed, but next to my room was a door. That door was open now. Following, I entered the trapezo dial room as big as Dagilo's studio work office, and similarly constructed. Inside, in the middle, was a very ornately carved heavy table with upholstered chairs all around it. Quiet, relaxing music came through the walls. At Dagilo's invitation, Krotk pushed a service wagon up to the table, with drinks, and each one took his favorite choice. This time only Dagilo spoke. She spoke once more about the Earth times, and about emotional problems that will come to me in the future. But she also complimented and praised me about my courage. And because of that they had a small but useful gift for me ready. It was definitely a creation just for me. I quickly tore it open as they said I was the only human being who will own such a gadget. I could not deny, they made me very curious. I immediately searched my mind. What sort of gift would it be? My question astonished everybody. Look, he can even ask questions. I thought he was speechless, said the hairy Pallian. The others agreed, and they all applauded me for my first and last question in the last 24 hours. Out of the pockets that he had with him, Krotk took a leather encasement. Carefully he handed it to Dagilo. Carefully she opened it. The object inside seemed to have satisfied her desired wish, because suddenly she gave out a whistling sound and barked adamantly. Curiously, I wondered, what a happy feeling a desired wish could achieve. A very valuable object must be in this wrapping, I figured. I had an intuition. 104, it dawned on me, that with Dagilo's superbrain the enlightenment of my thoughts would not escape her. And so it was. She continued and spoke to prove how correctly my thoughts were. We have decided to hand you a small gift to bring you joy and usefulness as well. And with this we thank you for your courage. Krotk will demonstrate and make you acquainted with its function. And beyond that it will guide you home. You and Krotk, you still have a half hour time until the flight object will take you over, which will then bring you home. My research group and I will say goodbye to now, and we wish you much good luck. Now only Krotk and I were left sitting there at the table. Smiling, Krotk took the case and opened it. Gently he pushed some. He slid something out for me and said, "Look." I was surprised. It looked like a pocket lamp, a flashlight made out of chrome metal. Not completely correct, he said, chrome is that thing not. It is a special palladium alloy and you cannot allow it to ever get wet, otherwise it will dissolve gradually and the interior will go up in smoke and steam. Actually it is not an ordinary pocket flashlight. It is more like a small power work and functions exactly 50 Earth years duration. It will last you for 50 years. 50 years functioning? I repeated astonished. 50 years long, Andreas, but only if you handle it as I shall now explain. Kroetke took the 20-centimeter long 6-centimeter diameter lamp out of the container case. On the head of the lamp there were 5 lenses. In each of these lenses there was a little plate of metal. Kroetke took his hand and touched this powerwork contact on its side. A few seconds and then it lighted up. Do you see? So you have to do likewise. The warmth of the hand is necessary as the second component to activate the process. If you want to shorten the ray of light, you touch the control with the light triangle on it. And with a long light ray, you touch the dark triangle, which you will touch here. You can also light up a room with this. If you touch the round circle contact here, this is how, and our room lit up immediately. Without any problem that little wonder work filled this fairly big room with light. I was fascinated and enthused. Do you see? This is not all. If you turn the head of the lamp around a little, you can create more light, or limit the shine to darker. Kroetke turned the head of the lamp all the way to the right. As soon as it turned it was brighter and one could no longer see the diffused light as before. What a magnificent performance. After he ended his demonstration he handed me the wonderwork. The now. It is yours, he said quietly and in a friendly way. And he pushed the lamp toward me, smiling as he did so. Excited with joy I 105 examined again this fine piece. Of the push buttons I could see nothing. This functioned only when you touched it in certain spots. This lamp weighed approximately 400 to 500 grams, and was not much heavier than an ordinary narrow flashlight with 6 batteries. How long Kroetke and I still remained in the conference room I do not know. It could have been an hour. At some time somebody motioned for me to walk into the transfer cabin. In a few seconds the transfer elevator brought us to the hall that led to that transfer hall. The transfer you already have experienced, said Kroetke as I stood in front of the cabin. I nodded. Then get in the now, he said quietly. And then pushed me gently into the cabin. I looked and found myself already in another flight object. There was a 10 square meter room. We both arrived at the same time. We don't need to go into the quarantine this time. It is not necessary when we come from the inside, he said. Chapter 24, Return Flight to Earth. Not more than 2 seconds later the Pallion opened the door. A few steps only and we entered the control room of the ship. 3 Pallion beings and 2 ladies were flying. Both of the ladies resembled the beautiful lady from with the bud nose. It seemed as if everything was the same. The flight object was the same type as I had arrived in. Only the crew was different and so nothing could scare me anymore or surprise me because I very quickly got used to everything and I felt very familiar. I changed my clothes before I took my place and sat down at the switchboard. I was given the same seat as I'd had a few days ago. Kroetke sat down next to me. We conversed a little bit about various things. Gradually Kroetke explained to me how the power system of the flight apparatus functioned, in the one that we were flying. For example, in this flight apparatus they used the pulling gravity power of the Earth, Kroetke explained, but I had difficulty imagining that. Imagine a simple circle made out of the highest best metals, he continued. A rod guided through the circle turns very quickly in an ice cold constant temperature medium. The production of this cold medium as well as the rotating motion of the circle utilizes very much energy. The heat that is produced by the energy generator has to be separated away from it. The apparatus turns like a normal electric motor but a few tens of thousands of times faster. And now this is what is happening, the faster this circle is turning, the more the gravity is lifted. The gravity reacting with the flight object is controlled by that mechanism. See sketch. The actual mass is transformed into apparent mass. The gravity of the Earth does not affect this apparent mass. The rings around the ship are created and generated because of the pressure of the Earth's atmosphere, which pushes the ship upward, repels gravity. The energy that is produced and heated up will be surrounding the flight body, and on this heat the flight body will glide, and motion begins, but this motion is not enough to sustain the reaction. The already existing heat energy is used in this action. I didn't notice immediately that a Pallian crew member was motioning that we were landing. So, now we are ready, said Krotk, quietly. Much love to you, my friend, he said. I gave the translating headgear back to Krotk. From here on I no longer understood a word. Krotk looked over at the pilot and received a nod from 107 him. Krotk accompanied me to the chamber where I was actually transferred down. In a friendly manner he said goodbye. Finito, done, he said, it is completed. Chapter 25, Back Home Again. No sooner did I stand up in the cabin than my body began to itch all over again. I felt like my senses were floating away. In another instant I was standing on solid ground. I found myself in the same meadow again. Gradually I realized where I was. I was about 100 meters from the original starting place where I first entered this flight apparatus. I looked around at this little old farmstead. So at 7 o'clock this evening I had arrived back on Earth. It was cooler, cooler at any rate than it was 3 days ago. From what height they transferred me down I couldn't tell, but it was nevertheless a masterpiece of transaction. At this late hour I was the only soul as far as I could see. Not another soul. Just me. Only the wind was with and playing its little games with me. How long I remained sitting here I do not remember anymore. I really awakened completely to the reality of it all as I walked through the bushes towards the old barn. And I woke completely up only when a branch brushed my face. What do I actually want here? And then I was filled with apprehension and I began to shake like a leaf on a branch. When I pushed the branch aside I was again shaking uncontrollably, and I even heard my teeth chattering. I held the leather encasement with the star symbol on it in my left hand. Now I knew that I had not dreamed the event, because I had the real object from the event in my hand. I opened the case to see if the instrument, the lamp, was still there. My heart started to race. Carefully I opened the case and, oh yes, it is really here. The thoughts shot through my head. Gently I took it out of its case. I tried to use it just as Krotk had shown me, and it really functioned the same way. My fearful moments were blown away. I was as full of joy as the King of Snows. I felt like a king about this thing. First I giggled within myself, and then I giggled louder. Nobody could hear me anyway. If I didn't have this flashlight in my hand I would be forced to say that I had had a fantastic dream. At this moment I had not yet realized that those few hours of my experience had changed my entire life, and even more than that, that this would haunt me constantly. I felt hunger and so I ran fast for home. Hurriedly I left this old pasture and took the shortest way across the fields, and still it took me a half an hour. It was dark already when I arrived in our small valley about 100 meters more and I would be home. In the hallway and in the living room there were lights already on. I had planned to sneak into 109 the house but the house door was locked. I looked in the window and saw who was home. Softly I knocked on the window several times. Who is there? My mother called. Please open it. It is only me, I answered. Soon I entered the house, and with pretty harsh words she said, now that you are finally, she greeted me. Without looking further at me she sat herself down at the table again. Because of her behavior I saw dark clouds developing. Naturally I did not notice. After I had refreshed myself I sat down at the table. It didn't escape my notice that my mother looked at me now and then in a weird way. She gazed at me in a disapproving way. Soon she will ask me a lot of questions, I thought. When we are alone we will talk, she said. Do you understand? Her words sounded angry. That is why I remained silent. I didn't want to begin senseless discussions. Even though she remained terribly calm, quiet, I could see that she was angry. Well, it turned out that I couldn't have known that during my absence they would have needed my help desperately, my help with the farming. Many times I had gone for 1 or 2 days away from home, and then also nobody asked about me. Constantly I searched for the right words, how I could make sense and explain things to her. It was only bad that I could not come up with a good excuse. I felt as if I would fall very soon into a deep hole. It was clear to me that within a few minutes, when she would come down from upstairs, that she would bombard me with 2 big questions. I heard her footsteps. Aha, soon it will start, I told myself. As she entered the room I searched my mind for excuses. But there she already stood in front of me and asked, "From where have you come? What have you been doing? What were you about?" And in a kind of negative way, "Where did you go and what have you been doing? Where did you sleep? Because you have apparently forgotten to announce yourself at home. You are not yet 18 years old and are not permitted to take such independence." I wondered, why did she treat me like that? I hadn't done anything evil. Her words became more and more harsh. The longer she spoke, the more she became enraged, a signal for me to answer soon before she became even more enraged. That I wanted to avoid as much as possible. As I tried to answer her, she shouted again, all anew, because somebody, there was nobody at the garage. "You should have been there to help. But from the fine little lord, not a hint of where? What will become of you? Where were you?" 110. That's why my presence was missed. Usually they did not mind when I would come home. Even now I remained calm and quiet, but inside me I felt a deep rift, a big distance from me to them. Gladly I would have answered, but I didn't know how I should answer. That with my behavior I had affected my mother so badly, a woman who is so patient. That she could become so upset was new for me. She jumped up from her chair and raised her hand as if she would give me a good beating. In order to force an answer from me, she screamed, "Where have you been? What have you done? Tell me, your father wants to know. We have been worried." And her breast was heaving in upset. Suddenly she stopped and paced nervously back and forth. Then she turned and shouted again, "Where have you been?" Still she was very excited and upset. Her eyes showed me everything. They pierced me like a drill. "I came from the sky, from the extraterrestrials," I answered coolly, "and I have brought a beautiful gift from them." First she turned pale and then a tomato red as she slapped me in the face. And I saw stars. "So," she said, "this is from me and this is from the sky, Klutz." And she hit me again by my ears. After she finished reacting on me and her rage was exhausted, she sat down at the table and sipped a cup of tea as she mumbled, "What shall I tell your father?" And tears stood in her eyes. "Tell him the truth. Your son was in the sky the whole time. It is true. Stop with this craziness, or I will hit you again, let you have a few more dash." But now she became a lot more calm. "We will speak tomorrow," she said. In this situation I took the moment to offer some arguments. "You have not really listened to me, what I just told you. I will show you something very quickly. What I told you a moment ago you did not hear. Look. See that? That is a lamp. This lamp was given to me as a gift. I turned on the light. In all humbleness I turned on the lamp. Tell me, can you find such a great lamp in our region?" "No," I said. "So far not yet. So, what do you say now? Surprised? Surprised?" I said with a voice of triumph and hope. My demonstration had interested her quite strongly, because she was quite familiar with pocket flashes, because we always used them. She agreed that the one I demonstrated was very different. She did not quite believe me for the moment, but at least kindness returned. Glad for that, I hurried to my room. Only after I got into bed I felt deeply exhausted. Soon I slept deeply. 111. Next day, After my father came home and my mother had briefed him on my absence, he took me into the living room and said, "All right, shoot," meaning to begin. I told him about my experience from the very beginning. In disbelief, they both listened to me. They weren't completely sure about anything at that moment. They told me not to talk about this experience to anybody, including my relatives, because my father's profession would be in danger, and there could be disturbances. If I should mention this to any authorities, they would be forced to bring in a psychiatrist. And he would most likely want to take me to clinic, and that would not be in my interest, would it? I promised to speak to no one about this experience, and I would not mention it, not even in front of my brothers. After this day, everything changed between us. A strangeness developed between us. I only felt like I was barely tolerated. For a few weeks my flashlight remained in its secret hiding place, but one day I searched for it with no result. I was convinced that my father had found it and probably just threw it away. On the 20th of November 1957, I was again eating my evening meal. My father made some remark about these bad flashlight batteries these days. They weren't always equipped for the job and didn't function well. He said he wished for himself a dynamo lamp, which would be definitely better. When I heard flashlight, I couldn't control myself any longer. "You have destroyed my lamp," I exclaimed. Since our unpleasant situation in the summer, I had not really exchanged any words with him. His face turned red and he threw nasty looks at me. I didn't know that one had to be afraid of flashlights, that one has to be afraid of them, I said in a sarcastic voice. Obviously my words hit home because he became enraged, and in this moment he had revealed without realizing it where he had left it. I was absolutely intending to find out where my flashlight was. In a rage he yelled at me, "I threw it into the pond." "Aha, so there is where he threw it," raced through my head. That could be the reason why the water in the pond had turned a bluish-gray with yellow patterns in it and was roiling for days in the middle of the pond. My flashlight may have been the reason for that. "That flashlight should have not have been touched by water," Kroetke specifically stated, "because the flashlight, if it came into contact with water, would dissolve itself," he said. "So it must have been my flashlight. But anyway, it was lost forever." After this experience with my father, I changed my way. I consequently changed my life and walked my own way. We only spoke to each other when there is no way to avoid it. Beginning in September 1989, I ran into my father once more, in the city of Hawless. We conversed a little in small talk, as if nothing had happened 112 between us. He asked me if I could sometime visit him. It would be better if I could come alone, because he wanted to speak about an important situation with me. When the time was right, he would let me know. I gave my assent and said goodbye as I parted from him. On my way home, I searched my head thoroughly, in thought, for reasons. Why and what did he want to talk to me about? Already 1 week after our meeting, he let me know that I can come now. It surprised me very much. We spoke about the happening from long ago, between him and me, and he said he was sorry it had come to such a conflict. He talked quite a while about it, but he had always procrastinated in doing something about it. And now he wanted to formally apologize. When he said that to me, he looked at me with begging eyes. He said he had felt very sorry for his harsh and violent actions toward me. Naturally, I accepted his apology, even though the old man regretted his mistake. It had taken a long time for him to express his apology. I am not sure whether he had found, meanwhile, literature and had read about experiences similar to mine, or whether he now had his own clues that impelled him to apologize in this manner. But he definitely did not let me know if he believed my experience way back then. Source for this text: https://www.unnerywisdom.com/wp/contents/uploads/2026/06/UFO contact from planetarian of Aldebar on.pdf